Welcome, everybody, to Midday Magazine for this Thursday, January 9th, 2025. Have your host, James J. Mayloff, here. Welcoming into the studio, our good friend, Matt Lippert, UW-Madison Extension, Wood County's Ag Agent and Educator. Matt, it is always good to have you with us. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Good to be with you, James.
Appreciate the time. I wanted to start off right away, Matt, talking a little bit about sustainability and how that is impacting our 2025.
Sure. So we talk about sustainability quite a bit in our extension programming, and we often talk about a three-legged stool. So there's different views on what sustainability is, but certainly a lot of people who are consumers of agriculture have a desire that agriculture should be sustainable. And I think that's why we see interest in things like organics, perceived to be maybe more sustainable, concern about, maybe greenhouse emissions from agriculture, not sustainable. Of course, if you have life, you're going to be emitting greenhouse gases. Mm-hmm. But also there's a circle there, right? So agriculture is very integrally involved in that relationship. But I talked about the stool. So we talk about a farmer definitely needs to survive in our kind of free market economy. We need economic sustainability. And then it should not be at the expense of environmental sustainability. And then the third one challenges people is their sense of social sustainability. So I'll use the dairy industry because I know it so well. Dairy farms have gotten significantly bigger. And it's in much of agriculture, that's the case. And so that means a social impact of that is if there's bigger farms, there's also fewer farms. And so that means it affects rural communities. There get to be fewer farm families. If a farmer can own large equipment and harvest thousands of acres when just a generation before they were maybe not even managing 100 acres, you lose families by maybe a factor of 10 or more. And so that affects rural school districts. It affects rural retail business. And then I think another social aspect is a large dairy may be not being harmful environmentally, but the neighbor still senses that it's affecting their quality of life from noise or traffic or because it's a big business. So there's those three aspects that I would encourage everyone to look at and think about when they think about sustainability is farmers need it to be economically viable. Certainly for the long run in the future, that needs to definitely combine with environmental sustainability. And then, as I said, social comment, what people feel about agriculture as well. I got a chance to experience some of this. I was with a group of mainly Canadian dairy farmers in November. We started out in Amsterdam, but we spent the greatest part of our trip in Germany. And so we see a lot, and we were visiting farms. We were farmers, so we did some tourist things, but we visited farms. And certainly the European Economic Union has a lot of different regulations, sensibilities, things that they're looking for in agriculture that are different than in North America with the Canadians and us in the U.S. different still. So that was a very interesting aspect.
Just a couple of follow-up questions on this. So for one, when it comes to that three-legged approach, certainly the ag industry is working hard on that and trying to go forward with it. Are there things we as consumers, we as people on the outside of this that want to support the industry can do to help with that? Being informed, I would imagine that's a big
awareness,
part of it.
Right? Yeah, yeah. And so, and that's not actually it can't be strictly the consumer's job. So what are you going to do? You're going to get on the internet, or you're going to go to your news media, and you're going to vote with your pocketbook when you make choices in the store. I spend a fair amount of time on Facebook, and these people that have thousands of followers that I guess they're called influencers. The influencers that I follow are fellow dairy farmers, and it's interesting to see some of them get right in your face challenging maybe some people that you'd describe as an animal rights activist or someone who thinks that who doesn't really know, because they're not really on dairy farms, they still feel they know how, for example, dairy cattle are cared for or maybe perceived as not cared for, I guess what I would ask consumers is that, you can't expect everyone to become an advocate for my cause, agriculture, but to just become more aware. And if you find something that you think that milk has antibiotics in it, or there's an inhumane practice with poultry, or whatever it is, to explore that a little more and find out, well, because the normal reaction of the dairy farmers is a dairy farmer wants the cow to be very healthy. Mm-hmm. And healthy is also mentally. The cow has to be happy. Mm. So a very common one is, the calves are removed very quickly, and so that's not natural, you know. So they do a pretty good job of explaining that, it's best for everybody concerned. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's all we can do is, and the university's involved in things like that, too. We have great information on animal husbandry and so forth.
If I could just piggyback on that, Matt, a little bit. One, I think that as somebody who grew up in a cause family with a lot of passions and a lot of causes, I get very on my soapbox about things from time to time. But one of the things I have learned as I've gotten older is I don't know everything.
None of us do.
Nobody does. The more homework I do on something, sometimes the less I feel like I know, and I need to actually talk to people in the industry. Yeah. And so I would definitely recommend that if you have questions, have things, reach out to farmers, reach out to ag industry members to get like straight up answers. No middleman, just talking right to a source. I think that is one thing. And if I can add also, animals do not think and feel like we do. And I am a gigantic animal lover. I came in the light with late in life with animals. I didn't grow up with them. But boy, do I love dogs. We just had the Humane Society in today, and I'm still thinking about the dog that was in here. I'm trying to do my job. I'm trying to focus on the conversation, but I'm thinking of the dog. But the people that I know that truly do care about animals and fight for animal rights, they'll be the first ones to tell you, we put our feelings and thoughts on animals way too much. And for what you think an animal might be struggling for, that animal, that's day-to-day life for them. That they're not feeling the emotions you do and stuff. While they do feel, and it is important to care for our animals, as you just touched on there with the milk and that example, I think that we oftentimes too much put on there. It's no different than, guess what? Your dog probably doesn't like that Halloween costume. That's for you. That's for you, not the dog. The dog didn't ask for to put that
didn't
on.
Didn't ask for that.
We do that too much with animals, where we put our wants and needs onto them way too often. There is a good balance there of caring about animals while also understanding that we're putting things on them that they don't really feel or have. And just real quick, I appreciate what you said there about not people, you know, caring about things just because you do. But I would say that we are all impacted by the ag industry, and we're all.
We all depend on it, right? We all eat.
We definitely need to care about this.
We also use other things from agriculture, obviously, like cotton and so forth. There's a lot of byproducts from animal agriculture that end up in the pharmaceuticals. We cannot separate the fact that we exist on the earth from this industry that we think is degrading the earth somehow, because we all need to eat.
Yeah.
And so we want to do that efficiently, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And efficiency might be scale, right? It might be largeness, but certainly efficiency is a aspect of sustainability. Mm-hmm. When you were talking about projecting human likes and desires, I'm thinking of it's January, and my phone says it's 18 degrees out now. So this is not as classic a one as some things, but a lot of people get concerned about livestock outside, and certainly your dog. You know, mm-hmm. I have a dog. I love my dog. She is a German short hair pointer. Mm. So she has very short hair, and so she doesn't live, she's not a husky. She's not going to be outside all winter. Very athletic, but winter is not going to be hours at a time outdoors. Yeah. But our horses, our Holstein cows that weigh 1,500 pounds, their internal body temperature, they're like really happy on a morning like this when the sun is out. You'll see them, they'll position themselves in the lot so that they're getting the maximum solar, and they're chewing their cud. They're not out there shivering, wishing that someone went and protected them. They are. So there's an example where you cannot project you as a human that maybe weighs 180 pounds or whatever you weigh. You're more like my dog that isn't going to be an outdoor creature versus some of these large livestock.
Yeah, it's a great example. I learned a little of that from my youngest. My youngest daughter, Isabel, her favorite animal is cows. And she's taught me so much about cows. That was one of the things she talked to me about. Because I think like a lot of people, you wonder about that stuff. Mm-hmm. It's a great one. And I appreciate you mentioning that. We're speaking with Matt Lippert, UW-Madison Extension, Wood County's ag agent. Matt, you mentioned that you did some traveling recently. You went out to Europe and that. And you, last time we talked, you had mentioned that you've got a trip coming up to Italy. Once I got through all of my jealousy about that, I did come across an article that I thought was really interesting and I've been hanging on to. There was a group of 20 Italian farmers that were in Wisconsin over a couple of weeks ago on vacation visiting ag businesses. The tour guide kind of showed them some of the practices and some of the things we do here. And while they were doing this as just kind of for fun, they ended up taking away a lot of information that they felt could be very helpful for them over there. You mentioned that you did get to do a little bit of sightseeing, but it sounds like that was a big part of your going over to Europe, in whether it was Germany or not, or maybe even your trip to Italy. Whether it's for fun or not, I imagine that brain of yours doesn't turn off. And the idea of sharing information up and down the state here in Wisconsin was one of the early things that you taught me. The idea of how the soil is different up north to down south and how farmers share this information. I thought that was really interesting. Now we're extending that even farther to across the pond, if you will.
Oh, so we're very interconnected here in the world. I'm going to go back to my own farm, which is, I think, a pretty nice farm, but it's not it's not like the only one of its type in the world. And in the last year, we've had, through the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, we had a group of people from Indonesia visit our farm, and as tourists, basically. And then we have had, as a smaller group, working on some technologies actually regarding methane emissions, we've had Israelis. And we also had Italians.
Yeah. Hmm.
So this is a pretty common thing in agriculture, that there is a lot to be gained. We in the U.S. In general, but also in agriculture, travel abroad less than perhaps like people from Australia, New Zealand, or Europe. They travel abroad more. And, you know, I'm not going to tell anyone how to spend their time. And there's a lot to see in this country. And if that's what you're comfortable with, that's good. But there is a lot to be gained. On my trip to Germany, it was actually largely with Canadians. And so in the dairy industry, they have a quota system that they get better prices than we do for our and more consistent prices for their milk. But they have to invest in this quota. It's a barrier to entering the industry. And so you learn when you're on riding a bus for 10 days with these people, you learn how that affects them. And then certainly in the EU, there's, when I get to go to Italy, that will be, again, in the EU, a very much different regulatory environment, more regulated, but also more government support than we get here in the U.S. So through the EU, consumer concerns about how much time an animal gets to go outside, do they actually get to graze? Is it a quality grazing? Or there's more of that in Europe than we have here. But on they actually pay farmers they incentivize them to do these practices. So I don't know that we're anxious to get more regulation control here in the U.S., but it's interesting to see how government, societies, economics, and a person trying to run a farm, how all those things interplay together.
Had a friend in high school that was an exchange student from Scotland, and I remember her and I talking a lot about, especially her being in the middle of Wisconsin here and just kind of never experiencing America until coming right here. And she was blown away by not only how many farms she saw and everything, but also how it didn't seem like, for her, where she was from, farmers were considered very high on the community leadership board or something, and how she didn't see it as much here, and the respect that was given. It seems like, and this was 20 years ago and everything, but it did seem like that there was an understanding there of something here that we try to get across all the time, and how important our ag industry is, how important it is, how it is the backbone of our country. It feels like it's very common knowledge there, where here, it's something that I don't want to say we're beating a drum and we're trying to get through people's heads or anything. I think there's a lot of people that do get that, but there are some that just don't seem to. And it did seem like the empathy there was just evident, where here we're trying to create that a little bit more.
And I've been near Scotland. I've never been to Scotland itself, but in Europe, and I think this is going a little bit away because World War II is now 80 years ago, right?
Yeah.
So, but there was hunger in Europe after World War II. A lot of infrastructure was destroyed. People were displaced and farms weren't working. So at least on the continent, and maybe in Scotland, obviously they lucked out. They weren't in the front lines of World War II. But there was a great appreciation of people that weren't directly involved in agriculture, that they needed farmers to eat, right?
I didn't even thought of that. That's an amazing point. Yeah.
Yeah.
We've talked a little bit about regulations and some of the government effect of this. When it comes to the other farmers out there, people that are in similar industries to you and that, were there techniques, were there things you could pick up from that that were interesting to you and that you've thought, oh, maybe I can do that on my farm, or maybe this will help a friend or another farm?
Oh, it was a very recurring theme with the trip to Germany, which I anticipated. We've talked a little bit about robotics on dairy farms. So we use that term for machines that will milk your cows is a classic one. And there's a couple ways to do that. The cow can, it's kind of a neat thing. The cow is, her udder gets full. She wants to get milked. And there you go. Some people that are trying to fight the dairy industry will tell you cows are forcibly milked. Well, no, they want to get milked, right?
Yeah.
And so on a robotic farm, they will show up to the milker typically about three times a day, and they're incentivized also. They get a little cow candy, so they get a snack, and they get milked. But they have to cooperate. They have to stand there and let this robot use laser and sense where their teats are and apply the milker. So Europe is the main companies that build robotics are based in Germany, Netherlands, and France, and it's probably what they get paid for their milk more, or a shorter labor pool, even though that is there's a lot of interest on that here in North America. The interest came on that stuff quicker in Europe, and so we saw a lot of robotics while there, milking, calf feeding, assembling the ration for the cows and different tools that, on my farm today, there was a person that showed up at 5:30 in the morning, and they're going to be there until probably 1, and they're going to be feeding all these cattle. So it's pretty efficient because they're feeding hundreds of animals. But on a robotic farm, it's even more efficient because this machine does all of that, and the farmer has to make sure the machine keeps working, or they may have to deliver some feed to an area for the machine to assemble it. And then there's robotic. You think about your Roomba, that vacuums your floor.
Yeah.
Well, they can do that with cow slurry and pens, too.
Wow.
So a lot of robotics, as if you think about Europe, kind of a zero population growth. Here in North America, too, there is just not... there's not as many people that want to work outdoors on a day like today as there used to be. And so a lot of interest in robotics and leading us a little bit in that technology of things we got to see.
Very interesting. And always an interesting conversation with you, Matt. I really do appreciate the time. Thank you again for everything you shared with us. I want to wish you safe travels, a safe trip and everything. Looking forward to when you get back and I can live vicariously through you on what it was like to be in Italy. We want to remind you that you can find out more about our friends from Extension and all the amazing people that are working over there at extension.wisc.edu. That's extension.wisc.edu. Matt, thank you again for the time. We'll talk again real soon.
Thank you, James.
We'll have more Midday Magazine coming up for you right here at 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR. We are locally grown radio.